to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello, and welcome to show number 153 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. This week, we have a wonderful, wonderful guest. I don't know about the other co-hosts, but I probably would not be doing a podcast today if it wasn't for Lou Mangiello. We are so honored to have you, Lou. Also, we have Jennifer on. Jennifer, what's up?
Not much. I don't think I'd be the Disney nerd that I am without the WDW trivia book, so... It's nice to talk
That's
to you,
true.
Lou.
Very true.
Wow.
Lou, welcome.
I'm honored. I can only screw it up for here. That's the nicest intro ever. So, and of course, when you're editing your podcast at 2 o'clock in your morning, like, oh, if it wasn't for Lou Mangiello, I wouldn't be doing this right now.
So. Lou, one of the things we like to ask all of our guests that come on the show, what makes Lou Mangiello a Disney nerd? Where did it start?
It really started in November of 1971. Little Lou Mangiello, I was 3 years old at the time and was living in Jersey. And, you know, mom and dad were Disney, you know, we were Disney, they were always Disney fans and heard about this new park open up and literally packed us in the family truckster and drove us down and came down year after year. And the more I came, the more fascinated I became with the place and, you know, wanted to learn everything I could about it.
I love that connection. And people who have listened to your show have heard some of your stories. I was actually glad, Jimmy, that you started with that, because I feel like if it ended that way, Lou, sometimes you make me cry because you talk about the family connection with that. And I have several friends who have, you know, those great memories with relatives that they spent all these, you know, wonderful years with at Disney World. And I didn't start going until I was an adult. So I think that's so cool to just, like, I love seeing pictures of, you know, the now and then when people show their first trips, which were like decades ago. That's super fun.
Yeah, I was really fortunate to be able to go early and be able to go back, you know, year after year driving down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Jimmy and I both actually, I think anyway, I know that I listened to you kind of on and off at first, because remember, podcasts used to be like, maybe people don't remember because it's, you know, the year of the podcast that's been around for 12 years. But I used to have to, you know, download something from a website or from iTunes and then plug in the iPod and transfer the podcast over. And so, you know, a lot of people have been listening to you for that long or on and off, and maybe some have not. But I love, if you could just tell, you started in New Jersey, you used to come down, and you said you came down to Florida. You didn't always live there. And I love the story you tell about when your wife, Deanna, when you first went down to do a live stream. Can you tell us how, like, this, how this started? Like, what gave you the idea? You obviously wrote a couple of books even back then. You've written several more since then, which we'll definitely link to. But you wrote books, and then you started this podcast thing, and then you thought maybe you'd do a live stream. Tell us how that went in case people have not heard that story.
All right. So the real fast Reader's Digest condensed version, I'm a lawyer in New Jersey. Don't hold either of those things against me. I had an IT consulting company on the side. I was always in the service business. So I had this idea that I wanted to make something once and resell it. That's where the idea of a book came to be. The only thing I really knew about was I had all this useless knowledge rolling around in my head about Disney World. And I said that the personal challenge I set out for myself was, can I write a book and can I get it published? And I set out to write the book I wanted to read, which was a Walt Disney World trivia book, found a publisher, book came out. I thought that was the end of the road. Created just a little 2-page website just, you know, about the book, just to try and drive people to it. And it turned into articles. And 2005, I hear about this podcast thing coming up, and I had to, like, literally ask Jeeves what a podcast was.
Jeeves.
And then, yeah, like in 2007, I started to, you know, I've always been a tech nerd and always trying to be, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's new and what's next. And live video broadcasting was just starting to become more accessible in terms of cost and technology. And the first night that I decided I was going to try it, I already had an online community. I had a bulletin board discussion forum back then. And I told my wife, I said, listen, I'm going to try this new live video thing out. I'll be up in like 10 minutes. Nobody's going to watch. Mm-hmm. And 6 hours later, she comes down. She's like, what the heck are you doing? I'm like, I'm still talking. She's like, I hear you through the air conditioning ducts. Like, who are you talking to? I'm like, I don't know. There's a few hundred people watching. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I have no idea. Like, we're just, but I loved being able to have, and you guys know, as content creators, especially like in a podcast, you know, you're pushing out content and you've got to wait for the feedback, right? You got to wait for a tweet, wait for an email, wait for some. But when you were able to have that real time conversation with people, it was a game changer for me. And since then, I've been broadcasting live every week since like 2007.
One of the things, Lou, I think you do better probably than, well, I can tell you anybody that I know of, is that you've taken these people who listen to your podcast and watch your live streams, and you know, they're not only just viewers and listeners, but you've really done a fantastic job of creating this like loyal community. And it's something I think every podcast strives for. One of our favorite things in the world is that when we're down in Walt Disney World and we run into somebody who knows, you know, who we are and appreciates what we do. So how did you do that? How do you build that community of people around what you do?
Well, let me start off by saying that, you know, the most important part of what I do is the people. And look, they are the ones who built the community. I am just a facilitator of it. So whether it was by creating the content or by eventually creating a home, again, this was sort of pre-social media. Sure. I started my discussion forum in 2004. You know, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter. So, you know, I think, like I said, they are the ones who sort of built this community together. And hopefully we become magnets for the kind of people that we want to attract, you know, people that sort of have the same sort of philosophies and ideals about what we want our Disney experiences to be like. And they're not into the trolling and the flaming and all the kind of nonsense that was going on back then.
Just some optimist and it still happens. Believe me, we run a Disney group, and believe me, we look to attract optimists, people who are in it for the right reasons. And,
absolutely,
and
man.
People we can gather together with and just talk. And you know, you feel, anytime you meet someone new, there's always like that awkwardness in the beginning. But I feel like, you know, when we go down there and we have like a meetup, there's none of that. So when you meet them, they're like this automatic connection because there's just that same interest.
And look, you know, for me, especially now, you know, I do a lot of stuff in the entrepreneurial side of things. And I see everybody's worried about the numbers and growing and the likes and the follows and tweets and shit. And you forget that there's people on the opposite side. And I look at it differently. And I've said since, if you go back to like my very first show, I always say, like, we're friends whether we have met yet or not, because that's how I look at people that take their time, which is their most valuable commodity, and spend it or share it with me. And then if you treat them that way and think about them that way, because that's how they look at you, you know, you form relationships with them. And I think you can and should, and you need to care about those. You can look, you can care at scale. You can't tell me like, oh, I have 5,000 followers, I can't care about everyone. Yes, you can. And it's important that you do. And look, I've been doing monthly meetups, like in real life person meetups, like since 2007, because it's not so that people can come and meet me. It's so that I can meet them. And so I can help facilitate the meaningful, real relationships between them that maybe they have started to create online, and then you bring together in real life. And the people who have become my closest friends are the people that I have met because of this Disney. I'm making like this giant circle, like this Disney thing, whatever it is that I've been doing.
When you've had like weddings come out of the WDW Radio Nation.
Yeah, it's plural. Yeah, there's been relationships and you know, marriages, and it's really neat to see. It's really neat to see, you know, again, being a very, very small part of helping like-minded people come together like that.
Well, I think it's a special community too. Just, you know, I don't think you mind me saying this, people have said it before, but you've been accused of being too positive, which makes me laugh because we all need a lot more positivity, especially nowadays. But I think that despite the fact that maybe things happen that aren't our favorite, or we lose attractions that we loved, or we're hesitant, like, what are they doing now? I'm sure it'll be fine. But what is it about Disney that you think when people get together, they do kind of have these shared values, and they do, and I guess especially people who listen to Disney podcasts that self-selects even for the people who like the details and like the story. And do you think this community is as different as it seems? What do you think makes it so special?
So I want to just, I want to touch on a couple of things because you said a lot in a short amount of time. So you're right. I have been told, and I've seen, you know, again, talking about mean people on Twitter, believe it or not, they exist, you know, that I'm too positive. And look, it's who I am. Like, I just lead a positive life. I mean, and it's funny and sad to me when I meet people sometimes in real life, like, wow, like, I can't believe, like, you're as nice in person as you are on the show. And I'm like, well, what'd you think? I was gonna be like a jerk in real life and like a nice guy on the show. And look, I'm a positive person because it's the way I live my life. And I think how you approach not just Disney, but every day sort of defines who you are. And not to get all preachy and weepy, but like, life is too short to be negative. And for me, you know, Disney has always been an escape. Right. We escape there on vacation. You walk through that portal and you forget about everything. So I just choose to talk about the things that make us happy about going to Disney World. Like, you don't want to hear me complain like, I had a bad hamburger, my French fries. Nobody wants to hear that. Like, you want to hear the things that are going to get you out of being buried under 40 inches of snow in Minnesota in January and wishing you were in Disney World. So I am just trying to be a facilitator to connect you to the experience that you love and enjoy and that makes you happy. And if that, look, I get it, man. I'm not for everybody and I'm cool with that. This is who I am. This is how I sort of choose to lead my life and do my show. And if that works for you, awesome.
I'm so glad you said that the way you choose to do it, because, you know, listening to some of the things you said, and, you know, I was never like a super negative person. I think I've always been an optimist, but probably about, I guess, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I made a conscious decision to really, really focus on living just a positive life. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. Believe me, I've got bad days like everybody else. But in that time, you know, I always try and refocus myself and just self-talk and stuff like that. That when I am having a bad day, is just thinking about it. You know what? I live a pretty good life, and I really shouldn't have anything to complain about. So just move on. So I think it is a personal choice, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
They put Frozen in Norway, though, so that's enough to really, like, ruin all of our lives, right?
Right,
like, that's
right.
That should
right.
be enough to complain about.
Right. Right.
I mean, listen, how anybody is still going to Disney after they took out Maelstrom? I have
I
no
know,
idea.
Right?
Right.
And Horizon.
Right. Exactly. You would have thought that was, like, some people actually believe that when it was going on.
It was like the apocalypse.
Yes, yes.
It was like and look, you know, It's sad and funny. However, you know, when you see people losing their marbles, and look, I get it, because the one thing about Disney is it evokes passionate responses, which means at their core, people care about it that much. But it's also sometimes, you know, especially on things like Twitter, where you're protected by that veil of anonymity and people are just going crazy and fights are breaking out and like, Pandora, you're going to go to Pandora? What are you, insane, man?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They haven't even moved. Like, at the point when they announced Avatar and people are like, I'm never going to Disney ever again because they announced Pandora. I'm like, they literally have not moved a speck of dirt and you have just.
But we've already judged it.
Yeah. Listen, that's fine. You know. Like I said, you surround yourself by, you know, for me, I surround myself, I try to, with positive people, because that's who I am. And if that's, you know, everybody sort of finds their tribe, right? You find the people, the podcast, the boards, the friends, whatever, that, you know, you most resonate with you. And, you know, look, I'm sure that the Disney Nerds podcast is not everybody's favorite, neither is WW Radio, right. And that's fine. You find your community.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, and I think
sure.
it's important that we learn to get out of the communities that aren't not to be to have your worldview be so small, but to get out of the communities that aren't helping you, that are toxic and that are kind of not allowing you to live that way. And actually, I'm going to invite you to get a little preachy because I don't mind it at all. But you mentioned that this is how you live your life. You are a positive person. You try to be positive in the other things besides Disney. And I know that you have over the last several years become, you know, you've spoken more and you mentioned doing things on like the entrepreneurial side. And I think that what is really what draws people in as well, besides the Disney content that you offer, is that idea that you can pursue what you love. And for you, it worked out, and not overnight. You had a lot of work put into it and still do, but it worked out that you get to do that for a living. But before that, you were already, you know, pursuing the things that made you happy, pursuing the things that made other people happy, that you could serve a community that way. Can you tell me like why that's so important to you? Because that is a huge passion area of mine, that we might be able to pursue a dream job, but even if we can't, like every moment in between our Disney trips, and, you know, we can just enjoy the time we're with our family or the sun or, you know, whatever we can find the positive in. How did that become so important to you?
So for me, the reason why I'm here and the reason why I'm talking to you and the reason why all this has happened along the way, it really comes down to two words. And I know that's like, this is oversimplification, but it's true. And those two words were what if, because I think so many people are like, there's so many people who are afraid to take a chance on something or to pursue something that maybe they are passionate about or something they do want to do. Cause like, well, what if it doesn't work? What if I fail? What if people hate it? What if I lose money? What all these negative things. And for me, I looked at it differently. I was in New Jersey. I was, you know, working two full-time careers. I had this passion for Disney. I was flying back and forth from New Jersey to Florida. And it, you know, I was starting to do things to make it a little bit of a business in terms of like affiliate stuff and making a couple dollars to sort of offset costs. But for me, the question I turned around, I was like, well, what if? Like, what if I can do this? What if I can somehow make this happen? I didn't have a business plan. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that my fear and the continuing fear that I think entrepreneurs need to have a little bit of fear in them was, you know, what if I don't do it? What if 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, I turn back and then I go, man, like, I wonder what would have happened if I tried it. I wonder what would have happened if I pursued this Disney thing. And I think going back to this idea that life being too short, you know, I think life is so short that you shouldn't have to get up and be like, oh, I don't want to go to my freaking job. I hate my boss. It so stinks. And you can't wait to get home and work on this other thing, whether it's at your workbench or your computer or in the garage or wherever that thing is. There really is a way, if you want to try and find it and work at it, to try and turn that thing, you know, turn what you love into what you do. And now part of what I do is try and help other people take those leaps of faith and see that they can and they should try and pursue it. I think that was a really long answer to a short question.
No, it's great. No, and I think one of the biggest things to take away from that is that, you know, to look back on my life, I would so much rather have tried to do the thing that I love and have failed at making money or whatever, rather than being so scared to do it that I never tried.
Yeah, man. And you got to remember something else too. You only fail when you quit, right? So if you run into obstacles, if something doesn't work, you know, especially in what the kind of things that we do, we have the ability to tweak and adjust and modify things to try and make it better all the time. So you might have setbacks, but again, you only fail when you quit.
I mean, I've been in high school and college courses and in church, and you hear like the list of people. Michael Jordan got cut from the basketball team, and Walt Disney is always in there. Tons of rejections. And yep. So you're absolutely right. Like this idea of success is almost never on the first try. So I think that's really important, but that's a good word.
I think it was Rocky who said, it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down, but how many times you get back up.
See, I was looking for a Thomas Edison quote, but Rocky works too.
So. Rocky, look, come on.
And look, Sylvester Stallone, you know, obviously he was Rocky, but I mean, he faced so many challenges and like slept on like park benches and was broke. I mean, he worked so hard to get that movie made and ended up making it himself and had to do it his way. And if he would have quit the first 20 times he was rejected, we wouldn't, you know, Rocky wouldn't be in our vernacular.
That's right.
You know, so an interesting side note, which is completely off topic, but that movie was, the original Rocky was very, like, it was groundbreaking for the time. Actually, they invented what is called the Steadicam, for that big harness that they wear to make that movie. When he runs up the steps and then the camera circles around the back of him, that was never possible before that movie.
Yep.
That's cool. Well, actually, you said off topic, but I think we have not really talked Disney too much yet, which is fine with me, but I think that probably other people might want to hear that.
The listeners may want to hear some Disney stuff.
Like, what am I listening to? This is okay. No, actually, we had Lee Cockrell on, and I told everyone the same thing. I was like, you know, this might not go exactly the way you think it's going to, but it's going to be good. It's going to be good stuff no matter what it is. And I think we all can hear these messages. I think it's important messages for everybody. But if we're going to talk about Disney, I was curious, we joke about Maelstrom leaving, and you've talked about how many attractions that we miss so much are not as great as we actually remember them being, maybe. And I still lament the loss of the entire Wonders of Life Pavilion. It may not have been as awesome as I remember it being, but I love it. What is if you had to pick one, like, ride, experience, show, attraction that you miss the most, whether it's was a great ride or just holds some memories for you, do you have a top attraction that you miss?
Well, The Making of Me, obviously. I would, I'm going to give you the recovering attorney answer, because I think we sort of bounce around and you hear things like Horizon, stuff like that. But I think for me, it would probably be 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, because as a kid, I bought into that ride. Like, I believe we were going underwater and everything I saw was real. And, you suspend your disbelief a little bit. And it was such a unique attraction in the story and the ride system. So yeah, I'd probably say 20,000. And then there's like 20 honorable mentions below that.
Like, all of them are
gone. That's actually a great one that I don't think comes up probably often enough.
I imagine, though, it was so incredibly, really life-changing as far as like what you could experience in staying in a theme park, but really being immersed somewhere else. Because we went, I never rode 20,000 Leagues. And then I went to Disneyland and rode the subs that are after they were already Nemo and Friends. And I just, you can see as an adult that maybe they don't go quite as low below the water as you think they do. And so I just sort of expected it to be not that amazing, but it is really spectacular even now. And so I think that it just had to be really mind-blowing to go there for the first time and see, to really feel like you were on this adventure under the sea, which is pretty cool.
Well, I think the vehicle helps to do it too, because you climb down this, small porthole through these very steep steps, and you're closed into this vehicle, which is unlike anything else. So I think that helps to sell, especially as a kid. I mean, it sort of really helped to sell you on the idea.
Yeah.
Sure.
So in the same vein, is there, I don't know, this is going to be the same kind of answer. You are not allowed to say Star Wars Land. Is there one thing that, like, nothing that broad, no attorney answers. Is there one thing you're really looking forward to that we know has been announced, or?
Star Wars Land.
Right.
I mean, look, Star Wars Land, whatever it's going to be called. I mean, look, as somebody who was born in 68, I was 9 years old when Star Wars came out. I remember sitting in Middlesex Mall, watching it for the first time with my dad. To be able to walk into that type of interactive experience is that 9-year old little boy's dream. Yeah. So, yeah, I am really excited for that. So you want something individually specific? No.
Maybe. I don't know. Actually, by telling the story, which is, you do that every now and then, it kind of sold the answer enough, because you were like the perfect age for that. I mean, that would have been, I didn't see Star Wars until I was much older, but like a 9-year-old boy seeing that for the first time on a movie theater screen, that really, it will be like, it'll be absolutely like nostalgic for you to walk around and
look,
live there.
I'm still that little 9-year-old boy. I'm pretty much the same height that I was back then anyway, so...
The opportunity to walk onto the Millennium Falcon.
Come on, man. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's bananas to think that you can walk around the cab and of the Millennium Falcon. It's just crazy.
You had a chance now. Let's see. You went to Hong Kong Disneyland recently, right? Have you been to Tokyo?
Not yet, okay. But very high on the bucket list.
And I know you're going to Shanghai, because I didn't hear about it fast enough to join you. What was that like? Because you've obviously done research and you've immersed yourself into this whole Disney world. And so when you know about visiting Hong Kong and you're going to know about visiting Shanghai, but was it, tell us about when you actually just got there, like how that felt to be on a completely different continent and yet at Disneyland. And because a lot of us are, you know, like to daydream about that. So what was that experience like?
So I will tell you first that my experience at Hong Kong is going to be very much like my experience at Shanghai, which is I did not prepare at all ahead of time. I still have not watched a single video of the Tron attraction, of the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction, because I want to see it first with my own eyes.
Yeah.
And Hong Kong happened really by accident. I was speaking in the Philippines, of all places, and I had a 9-hour layover in Hong Kong. And on the way back, I'm like, all right, I'm going to give it a shot. And if I miss my flight, no big deal. I'm not going to miss the conference. So it was a very short cab ride. And I was only able to spend about 5 hours there. And I was the 9-year-old kid that was giddy and grabbed a map and was looking around and in wide-eyed wonder. I will tell you, though, Mystic Manor is very, very impressive, unlike anything else that I have seen anywhere, both in ride system, technology, storyline, details, the surrounding vicinity. It is an incredibly immersive experience. And if what I'm hearing about Shanghai is true, which I have to believe that it is, some of the attractions that I mentioned there are revolutionary in so many different ways. So I'm super stoked.
I like the fact that you you're trying to avoid any of the spoilers for those things. I've done the same because I haven't been to Walt Disney World since the Frozen Ever After or the new Soarin' has opened up, and I've refused to watch. I know there's a ton of probably YouTube videos and live streams and all that going on in these attractions, and I've concentrated on just avoiding them because I want to see them. I want that initial experience, and I don't want to rob that from myself.
I think that's a really neat experience too, because I am not usually like that. I am the person that is like watching every angle of everything and just really like soaking it in, just because I enjoy it. And I know it's, you know, I like being at Walt Disney World, and I'm sure the Frozen Ever After ride has got a lot of really great qualities. I actually am not tired of Frozen at all still, and I have 3 young kids. So, I'm looking forward to that ride, but I just inadvertently hadn't watched the Soarin' Around the World video until I wrote it. And it really does make a difference to just, I mean, because I didn't know what the score was going to be like and, you know, how the, you know, just what the scenery was going to be. And it was really incredible to actually just experience it in that really like extra magical way. So that's really.
And in today's day and age, it's really hard to avoid it, really.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance to tell about the Dream Team project and the running team, and because you and the community have done really incredible things. Can you talk a little bit either about the running team or the Dream Team project, all of the above?
So you're just trying to get me to cry on the pod. I get it. Sorry.
Well, I was expecting to make me cry later. Yes. But
if you cry, our ratings will go up. I know it's not all about the numbers, but
podcast gold. I know.
Right.
Yes. All right. So when I started writing my first book in 2003, my dad was diagnosed with cancer and living in New Jersey. So he and I drove back and forth to Memorial Sloan Kettering in the city 5 days a week for however many months it was. And unfortunately, we had to pass the pediatric cancer ward, which is heartbreaking. And, you know, my heart went out to those kids. And I said, look, I need to do something to try and help them somehow with what I am doing and somehow incorporate that. And I said, look, I don't want to raise money and give it to research and funding because they will probably never see the benefit of that. And I was thinking about and spending my time talking about a place that we describe as magical and life-changing. And I wanted those kids to have that experience. So I wanted to work with a wish-granting organization. Originally, I worked with Starlight Starbright and eventually Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. And I took a portion of the proceeds from the sale of all my trivia books at the time and everything I've done since and donated it to Make-A-Wish with the specific intent of sponsoring a child's wish to go to Walt Disney World, get them out of the hospital for a while, get their parents out of that environment, because I do think it's a special place and special things happen as a result of that. And it's been amazing how, again, that community that has grown sort of rallied around that. So when I ran my first and only half marathon, basically on a dare in 2008, it was me, my wife, and one other person. Other people were saying, well, man, if little Lou Mangiello can do it, I can do it too. And we started raising money for what I call the Dream Team Project to benefit Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. Long story longer, 8 years later, we have a running team with 600 members plus from around the world. We've raised more than $250,000 for Make-A-Wish. We've gotten to meet a lot of the kids and the families whose wishes we've sponsored at some of those meets of the month. And we have charity auctions and other special events. And, you know, that is because of and thanks to, again, this community of people that has come together and donated their time, their efforts, their energy, their talents, their merchandise specifically for these auctions and for all this fundraising. And again, I am so grateful and so blessed just to be able to be a part of that.
That's very cool. I actually have not, since I really started seeing more about the running team, and I haven't run since. I've run several Run Disney races, but I try not to. And so I have not yet become a part of it. But if I ever get roped back into doing a race, it will be at Disney World, and we'll have to connect that way. But
well, and the nice thing too, the running team, I sort of say it in air quotes, because look, you don't have to be a marathon runner. The idea is that it's a fun community thing, and it's for a good cause. I don't really run, but we have a team of people that cheer not just our runners, but every runner that's out there for all the races. I do the 5Ks because I think it's the most accessible race. So if you want to walk it, wog it, jog it, wheel it, whatever, you want to eat along the way, I'm your guy. Like also I'll walk the 5K just to try and get people into it. But I love being able to be out there and cheer people on because I know what a challenge it is to do it. And sometimes having a friendly face or a bunch of friendly faces in the crowd is so helpful. So
I actually think that it was a running team member that passed out pretzels when I was like crawling my way in the fold that I'll never do again. Like I was literally dragging my legs behind me and hurt. And I was like, give me food. And I think they had like a big bucket of pretzels. I'm pretty sure it was somebody on your team. So that's much appreciated.
You guys did a run here in New Orleans not very long ago.
Last year, we do on the road events, and last year we were in New Orleans, and man, that was like the best race to run and cheer. Like, and as somebody who cheers, you know, sometimes it stinks. You know, you have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and get to Epcot, and you stand out there and you're running around trying to get on the course, and it's an exhausting day. Not in New Orleans, you get up like a half hour before the race starts. You step outside, you cheer everybody on, you got a Bloody Mary, you go back to the lobby, there's a blues trio right there. I'm like, oh, this is like, that was the best race ever. So
I saw it, and I don't remember what, but I may have had to work or something. I really wanted to go out there, and just recently, I just got added to a Facebook group called NOLA Box People. So it's local NOLA fans. So they did a meetup not too long ago, and I actually was at work, and so I couldn't make it. But they plan on doing some more meetups. So I definitely will try and attend some meetups because it's a great group of people.
They are really good people. And I love the fact that they get together on their own, too.
That's fantastic. Man, how fantastic is that?
We have a very, very well-known marathon weekend in Cincinnati. If you want to come up here, I'll help organize it.
But also, Cincinnati is not nearly as fun.
No, it's totally not. It's totally not. But the marathon people who like marathons think it's important. So maybe somebody wants to do it. We mentioned the box, and in case people don't know, it cracks me up that Lou, you mentioned how you started live streaming when it was kind of not, you certainly didn't have Periscope on a little iPhone. So you would carry your laptop around. And was it you or somebody in the box that dubbed the box?
I think somebody dubbed it. I was doing something in like Seattle, and I was walking around and I said, yeah, like I'm just, you know, I'm carrying you all around in this little box. And they're like, yeah, we're Lou's box people. So and funny. Logo. And they're like logos and Facebook groups and all this kind of stuff. So they are the box people.
It cracks me up just picturing you like walking around with a big laptop, like live streaming, like how far we've come in 10 years.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, like walking like through security, and you know, you've got a laptop and battery packs and all kinds of like stuff. He's like, dude, would you go ride a ride and like have some fun? I'm like, it's a long story.
That's great.
So other than So we talked about how it kind of, I guess it all started with the trivia books, which I was just thinking about that. It must have been interesting to do. Like, was most of that stuff already in your head or written down somewhere? Or was there like a whole bunch of research that kind of went into that?
So both. When I first had the idea, and in order just to sort of prove the concept to myself, I literally went down my basement and I just brain dumped. Like, I just started writing questions and writing down facts I knew in my head. And then there was a ton of research, obviously, because the facts have to be correct, and trying to come up with stuff that was both fun and challenging. And the goal was to, A, make it a game people could play. And again, as somebody who drove in the car, I'm like, oh, you can play this game in the car ride down. But I wanted people to learn a little something, too, so it would enhance their experience once they did get there.
I mean, that's the first time I had heard of you, and that was probably before I was into – I know that came, but that was probably before I even had heard of a podcast. My first venture into, like, social media was like a message board. It was intricate.com.
Yeah, sure.
But so so after the books, then came the podcast?
So let's see. My first book came out in 2004. The podcast started in 2005. A second book came out in 2006, and then – I've had additional books and audio tours and other products.
That's where I was going, with the tours. And then that's fantastic, man. And congratulations to you and the success you've had. And it's obviously well deserved. You're a pillar of the Disney community. So, Jennifer, you have anything else? Because I want to be respectful of your time. I know it's late there. I'm in New Orleans, so I'm an hour earlier here. So
no, I was just going to chime in that the timing, I guess I hadn't really realized. I said that the books were kind of what made me begin this Disney nerd thing. And I mentioned it because I remembered that being true, but I wasn't exactly sure. But the timing is exactly right, because we would have planned, my husband and I went on our honeymoon to Florida, which, and then to Disney World for a couple of days. I dragged him along and we did like open to close in June with peanut butter sandwiches in the car because we were totally broke. And it was like, it should have been the worst experience ever. And I think it kind of was, but like, had we not been on our honeymoon, we probably would have not gotten along very well and probably would have hated Disney World. But we ended up like falling. I had gone in high school and he had gone as a child, but not a lot. Like, hadn't seen those details and the stories. And so then we started planning a return trip and a trip to bring my parents and my sister, who's 9 years younger. And so between 2004 and 2005, when we took everyone back, I just dug into all of that. And so that would have been the perfect timing for the trivia book to be out and, like discovering the message boards. And really, you know, we were at Disney World and noticed the details to some extent and noticed the story, but had no idea, like, how deep and how vast and wonderful that actually is with the whole company. So I do appreciate you and just everyone who's kind of built into that, the Imagineers and the, you know, it's so fun to talk to people who really love that. Like, the cast members at Disney Parks are great, but my favorite are the ones who are just passionate about the same things that we are. And they love the trivia and they love, you know, just spending time hearing about the stories. So it apparently was really all you. So thank you.
No, thank you. And listen, it's been really great to get to know you over the years, Jen and Jimmy. I know we haven't met in real life yet, but we've seen each other a lot in Disney and at conferences, and you've always been very nice and kind to me. And I really appreciate that.
Even when you spilled Starbucks on me.
I did.
No, not on me. We dropped my cup. It was a podcast movement. It was so funny. I told Kyle, I'm like, he looked like he felt so bad. I was like, it really wasn't a big deal, but
I felt bad for you.
I did.
Wait, I do. That's right. That's
the Starbucks right, in the hotel. Yeah.
In Dallas. That's right.
Yeah. Like, You like bumped into me. Yeah. That's all it was. But I was like, I had to kind of like let it go. Cause I mean, he felt so bad. So I never mentioned it again.
You know what? The next time I see you in the parks, I owe you a Starbucks.
Fair enough.
Well, I'll be down a couple of times, except not for your event in October. I'm like surrounding it. So the weekend I'm not in Walt Disney World. What are you doing? Your Momentum conference. Is it sold out yet?
It is actually. Oh. Yeah. So,
well, tell us about it anyway.
Listen, if you want to come, I know a guy. Right. I'm just saying, I could make that happen for you. I really do like being able to help people, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, or people who are just thinking about doing something, you know, get from where they are to where they want to be, and not in a huge conference setting. So I'm doing a 2-day event in Walt Disney World called Momentum. And the first day is a workshop limited to just 50 people, where I and a few other entrepreneurial presenters will be not just talking about some of the practical and tactical stuff that you need, whether you're just starting out on your journey or are trying to get to that next step, in a very interactive workshop environment. And then the second day is just 10 people in a very small, very intensive mastermind group where, again, unlike other conferences, I have web developers, graphics designers, marketing people who are in the room. So you aren't just leaving with a notebook full of ideas and you go home that you never execute on. Yeah. Like, we're going to make real changes like right there on the spot.
That's what I need. I have so many notebooks of, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to that someday. I'm going to read that again. I'm going to do those things. And by the time I get back to it, it's like, you should do this thing on MySpace. Like, wait. Missed that boat. I totally missed that one. Can't do that anymore.
MySpace is coming back. Just don't give up yet.
One day. Right.
That's too funny. It's been so great to talk to you both now and, you know, the times that we've seen you. So hopefully we'll be able to connect again in the parks. And, you know, when my husband retires, I'm moving down there. So mark your calendar.
Nice. And I really appreciate you guys having me on. This has been a lot of fun. And if there's ever anything I can do to help either of you guys, please, by all means, let me know.
Thank you so much. We really do appreciate that, Lou. And we appreciate your kindness and coming on the show. So,
and real fast, we didn't tell people where they could find you.
Oh, good point. So, if they're listening to this show, I guarantee they know where to find Lou.
No. All right. So all the Disney stuff that I do is at WDWradio.com, and everything else is at LouMongello.com, and I am at Lou Mongello on all the social stuff.
Awesome. Very cool.
Including MySpace.
Right.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you so much.
Go on there first. Thank you, Lou. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you a lot.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals bear.